Vardian, get in. Close the door.
Sure. Hey, Dylan. You've been busy up here.
Yeah, this is what work looks like. I've been trying to figure out a solution on the monster ecology problem. I need a couple of sigils in the right spots.
Dylan, are you sure about this?
I wasn't entirely convinced magic existed until last week, Aram. I'm not certain about anything.
I assume this is one of those things you weren't quite sure about?
I mean, I could probably get better materials for this if we had more funding.
Well, for $2 a month, supporters on patreon.com/killeverymonster get access to ad-free episodes as they are released. For $5, you'll get those ad-free episodes early, along with audio DM notes featuring Dylan and I recapping what went into producing each one.
For $10 a month, you'll get audio and video DM's notes, along with extended cutting room floor content that didn't quite make it into the main episode.
We also have a $25 investor level and a $50 producer level. Support at these tiers ensures we can continue to produce Kill Every Monster and allows us to hire more talent from the community. Both levels also get a personalized shout-out at the end of every episode, and producers get a welcome pack of each official Dead Ghost and Kill Every Monster pin we've got left in stock.
The $2, $5, and $10 Patreon tiers are available with 7-day trials for new subscribers, so head over to patreon.com/killeverymonster and check out everything we have to offer at no cost to you.
Want a free way to help the show? Give us a review. Written reviews are amazing, but even clicking 5 stars is a huge boost. Podcast reviews are the best way we have to get the show in front of new listeners. You can leave reviews for Kill Every Monster on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Podcast Addict.
Find all the ways you can support the show and leave us a review at patreon.com/killeverymonster.
My name is Aram, and my pronouns are he, him. I'm the writer and producer of the Dungeons & Dragons podcast, God's Fall.
My name's Dylan. My pronouns are he, they, and I'm a physicist from Canada.
Welcome to Kill Every Monster. This week on Kill Every Monster, we are featuring the Will-O-Wisp.
The Monster Manual describes Will-O-Wisps as malevolent, wispy balls of light that haunt lonely places and battlefields, bound by dark fate or dark magic to feed on fear and despair.
We are joined by Amelia Somm. Amelia is an ethereal immortal currently making content in the tabletop game space. They create videos on TikTok and appear in several podcasts and live streams, including Unprepared Casters and Guild Fellows. To see what they are up to now, you can find them most places at Amelia Somm or by going to links.ameliasomm.com. Welcome to the show, Amelia.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
This is one of the things that falls into our long list of monsters that I fail to think about until they come up.
Really?
We'll get into the whole thing. But like...
Horse, cart, I got you.
Yes. For the audience who may not know, what is the Will-O-Wisp?
Imagine just like a tiny little glowing light. There's nothing in the center of the light. It's there. It's like a little ball. And it hates you specifically. And it wants you to have such a bad time. Because this little ball of light is actually kind of someone's soul. According to the Monster Manual, it was like a bad person's soul. And then they died. And now that's everyone else's problem until you kill it. It's one of those classic situations of things that this would fuck up a normal human so quickly. Very, very easy for an adventurer to kill. Because you have things like dragons, which arguably are difficult for anyone to kill.
Right, no matter what the level. But you get a couple levels, you can take out a Will-O-Wisp.
These things tend to be in wooded areas. It's dark. It's foggy. You don't know where you are. You've gotten off the beaten path. You're trying to find your way back. Or even better, you're on the path and you're on the safest place that you can be in the middle of the night. And then off in the distance, you see a little glowing light. and you're like, I know I'm supposed to stay on the path. I've listened to Into the Woods. I know this is how this works. But there's just a little bit of curiosity. And that is because Will-o'-the-Wisps are evil motherfuckers. I think it's so interesting that it's like actively taking advantage of people's curiosity and the idea that someone approaching it, unless you already knew what it was, you would just walk straight up to it.
Yeah, it's the same trope as the child vampire. You just walk straight up to it because you're not expecting any danger at all.
It would start fucking up your day, like, so hard. So it's just this little, like, a little ball of light.
A lure in the darkness.
Yes. Very anglerfish energy.
Mm-hmm. That's how I see them as well.
Yeah, they're this thing that's frequently used as a symbol of, like, just a misleading hope. I always hear them in reference to swamps. Or there's the bit in Lord of the Rings where they're wandering through a swamp and Gollum is just wandering around going, don't listen to the voices. They're going to tell you to come over here, but, like, don't do it. It's the same thing, except it's dark and you're trying to find your way home. And then you see this little glowing light and you're like, oh, I should go that way towards the people. No, you shouldn't. That's a bad thing. Don't go there.
It's like, at the end of the day, isn't all anyone wants just to find a little sliver of light in darkness?
And darkness can screw with you, like real darkness, darkness we don't get anymore because of all of our technology, right? But I live by Lake Michigan, and when I walk out on that lighthouse pier and I go a quarter mile into the lake and I'm just staring towards the lake, I am surrounded in the blackest blackness. I cannot see anything, but you can hear it. I know there is the largest body of water that exists for 1,000 miles directly in front of me. I can feel its presence, but I literally cannot see a single wave.
So sexy. That's so hot conceptually.
It's also overwhelming, and it could fill you with a terror that is, you can, like, I put it down, but, like, in my mind's going, there could be the largest creature right next to you. And you'd never know it before it was too late. Even though that's a ridiculous thought, because I'm at Lake Michigan. Nothing lives there that could do that. But you could get there, and then you're in, like, a swamp at night? Holy shit. I'd walk towards the light, too.
This is how I know that my brain is wired so wrong. I'm a Magnus Archives girly, but I'm like, oh, wouldn't that be kind of fun? Like, oh, is the giant entity in the darkness, are they, like, single? Like, or what are they looking for?
I get a weird sort of middle ground voice in that, like, I went cave diving once, did this little tour, and they got into this one section where it's just, this is so deep in that guaranteed there is no light coming in, so we're just going to shut off all the flashlights. This is what black looks like. This is one of the only places in the world where you are going to, like, if you went into your closet, there's still enough little permeation. When I say there was no light in there were no photons. Zero. And there is a moment where you can't see anything, and my brain just goes, well, if every direction's the same, go forward. And it's just like, I had this weird impulse to just go.
And if I was in that cave and there was total darkness, and even a not total darkness, if we're just talking like regular, like 80-90% darkness, and I saw a little light off in the distance, why would I not go see it? There are lots of folk stories all over the world about weird light in the distance. Not sure if it's hallucination. I was like reading through about it and it was like, here are possible natural phenomena. And I'm like, get out of here with your science. No offense, Dylan, but get out of here with your science. Those are ghosts. The only reason that I would know not to go for that, like not to go out, is because there are so many folk stories about how that's such a bad thing. And it also reminds me of how many folk stories are just ways to package, here's how to not get killed in the woods, to children. And then they just kind of keep that energy with them. Like, don't go in the woods because a wolf is going to eat you. And it's like, that's true. It's just like not maybe the wolf that you were thinking.
Don't go too near the river or the kappa will drown you. Yeah, it's the same kind of warning for children, no matter what culture it comes from.
Yeah, and if you think you see something, you might actually see something. Don't go out to it. Especially like in swamps, there's like weird gases and shit. I don't know what happens in a swamp.
You don't know how deep it is in any given step. Like, you're going to take a step forward and think you're fine, and suddenly you're underwater.
The Will-O-Wisp is a really unique creature for this story about a parent giving that lesson to a child, because it kind of balances your reason versus your fantasy. You're on a road. The road is safe. You're told not to leave the road, and you are assured that that road is safe, but it gets dark. You start to doubt it. You start to wonder, and then you see a light, and you know a light's safe, but you're told not to leave the path. So there's this interesting fight you have, like, it seems the character always has to go through this little mental battle. And if they lose that mental battle, the physical battle is already lost. There's nothing to win there. Like, once you lose that fight in your own mind, you're already dead.
If you don't know what it is, isn't there just a part of everyone, especially in adventure scenarios, where you want to be the chosen one, you want to find the magic thing? And that's why I think, like, in the D&D sense, putting this in front of players who might not know what this creature is, you tell them there's a strange light in the woods, they're like, in a meta sense, oh, that's a plot hook. But in the in-character sense, it's maybe that's meant for me.
When they talk about even just Satan leading Eve to the tree of knowledge of good and evil, John Milton in Paradise Lost talked about it as if it were a will-o-wisp, as a flame which oft, they say, some evil spirit attends, hovering, blazing with delusive light, misleads the amazed night wanderer from his way to bogs and mires, and off through pond or pool, there swallowed up and lost from succor far. It's always this idea of just this shiny little thing, this little beacon of, like, that should work out, that's gonna be fine. No, it won't. It's never fine.
I also love that, especially like D&D lore specifically, because obviously the lore in the world kind of varies, as that's just how humans
work. That's how
cultures go. That's a culture. Believe it or not, cultures, they have things in common, but sometimes they have differences. But the idea that something that, I just can't get over the fact, something that is so, like, inherently evil. Like, if you look at it, it's like, these guys are bad. They were bad when they were living. They died in a weird sort of supernova, condensed, and now they're a fucking quasar of being mad at you. And you know what they're going to do? They're just going to be these cute little lights, so you'll want to go hang out with them. Like, that's so insidious.
This is the thing that I don't particularly like about the D&D portrayal, is, like, on one hand, that idea of making them evil and insidious and they're luring you off to try to kill. They don't ever provide a why for it. It's always just like there's someone horribly evil who died in this magical cataclysm, but you're walking through like ground zero of wizard nukes. Like, you're already fucked. Why are they there? It takes away from the Will-O-Wisp, I think, to pull them out of that sort of standard bog and marsh environment. Making them undead as opposed to something fey really kind of fucks it up a bit in my head.
We're going to get, and I assume you guys have talked about this at some point, because we're going to get to my favorite thing about D&D, which is my least favorite thing about D&D, which is how D&D conceptualizes good and evil. Like, already, you are making a mechanical scale of what is good and what is evil. So first off, we are in tenuous territory, my guy, and then you're going to do it badly. And that's just like the icing on the cake there.
Yeah, you're always going to make it less interesting.
I think it's so interesting how it seems the world and mechanics of D&D operate on a basis that is so different in, like, not mechanical rules, but like kind of sort of cultural, maybe? I don't know what the word is. Rules that apply to, like, player characters, in the sense that I feel like all of us have played a lot of TTRPGs, a lot of D&D.
Oh, yeah.
I assume you've played a character or been in a party with a character who was an absolute piece of shit, and this is, like, their redemption arc.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Character, not player.
Yeah, sometimes the same.
Sometimes it's the same, and that's a whole other thing, but that's not, I'm just gonna put that in a little box over
don't
there.
Don't use your DM for therapy, for fuck's sake.
Don't use please your don't. DM for therapy. They're not qualified.
I don't have that skill set.
We're probably more maladjusted than you are.
Yeah. I think there is something that's so boring about the idea of you were a bad person in life, and so now you're going to be a bad soul thing forever. Especially because it's like, okay, when you say evil, first of all, just the concept that bad things always deserve to be punished in bad ways.
And for eternity. It's usually forever.
Forever. All you're doing is making everyone around you just as miserable as you were.
With no chance of redemption, no chance to grow, no chance to look back on your past and maybe learn from it. You're just trapped in the state forever.
Look, I've been here for a quarter century on this earth, and I've experienced bad things before. And however bad those things felt, anything that felt like it would last forever didn't. It was a shitty time. I cannot imagine what your average, like what a reasonable like human or humanoid person could do that would warrant like an eternity of punishment. And I understand that like the rules behind this isn't that someone is out there like doing this to them, but in a world that is so based on some kind of cosmic balance of good and evil, that there's no recourse for this. And like, that's the thing with Will-O-Wisp is that it's like your soul is so transformed, but there's no way to put it out of its misery without destroying it. And then once you destroy it, it's like, okay, now do they get to go and hang out with Bahamut or whatever? If they were like good, do they go to hell? Like what happens?
You can't destroy energy. We know that's true. Maybe a soul is energy. Maybe it isn't, but it does seem like in one of those cases where the soul just gets obliterated, there's either permanent torment or you obliterate the thing from all existence. Those are the two options, two really bad options.
This is why I like the more modern paranormal approach to ghosts. Were I asked to write how Will-O-Wisps work, they're not evil. These are people who always died somewhere you shouldn't go. And they're always floating there as this little beacon looking for help. They're this thing that looks like hope. If you need help and you see another person, you'll go towards it. But if that other person also needs help, you're not putting yourself in a better situation. So then if you remove the soul, like the soul, when they died, the soul did whatever a soul does. But that impulse, that moment of death leaves the imprint. And that's what the Will-O-Wisp is. It's not their soul. It's their fear.
It's literally the reflection in the water.
Yeah.
And it's a person who died in fear, and then they're still scared. And every time they see an actual other living person, they reach out trying to communicate. And that's what kills the other person. And then they're in fear. And that would be a way to do the fucked up version of the monster. And it's still better.
It also creates a cool feedback loop. And there's also, like, especially if it's not souls, especially if it's this sort of like magical psychological imprint, you can imagine that that wouldn't make multiple instances. That would intensify a single instance. And at that point, you also have an excuse to build out a bigger creature. Like, why do you kill a Will-O-Wisp? The moment you see a Will-O-Wisp, you murder that fucker because it creates more Will-O-Wisps. And once there's enough of them, it ain't so fucking wispy no more. It's just this soul fire burning there.
The swamp expands to contain them.
The Will-O-Wisp Tron.
And you're right, Dylan. It has to be a swamp. It has to be, because not only is it just feel right, but there are stories of Will-O-Wisp from all over the world because there are swamp gases that dance in the distance and people would see them and then interpret them in their own story. So those lights are real.
So for the record, that explanation was proposed by Alessandro Volta in the 1700s and is not actually what people have settled on. We're still trying to explain what they are.
Oh.
We really don't know.
Okay.
I do think you're onto something, though, when you're talking about putting Will-O-Wisps in a story. I think it always needs to be a place with gases or fog. And the another reason why, if you haven't ever seen a Will-O-Wisp in something, like in media, I mean, oftentimes what happens and why it's so deadly is you see it in the distance, and once you walk toward it, it's further off. In the same way you can put like hags in a coven and they behave differently, like do something like that where you could have them kind of working together to like lead people to something, whether that something is good or bad, up to you. Because it like references that they can communicate in the languages they knew in their life and that they sometimes like work with like hags and things. When you have it in a place that is foggy or, you know, gaseous, it is so hard to tell once you've reached it or not. And I think it's interesting. It specifically says they have variable illumination, so like 5 to 20 foot radius, so it could seem really faint because it's so far away, and then by the time you realize it's closer than you thought because of the variable illumination, it's already too late. You are in the wisp zone.
Oh, see, I'm imagining it in reverse, because I'm imagining you'd see it real, real bright off in the distance, and it's just slowly turning the light down so it looks like it's at a constant distance. Oh. And then once you're getting out there, the Will-O-Wisp in D&D can turn invisible. It can turn it off. So it's just one of those things where you slowly dial back the light so they feel like they're constantly... It's just another couple of feet. And then you fucking disappear. And you just leave them stranded.
And then you just, like, maybe, like, make little noises on the outside. Because you know the Will-O-Wisp wants to fuck with
you.
Oh, yeah. It's not going to be an immediate kill.
What if there was a Will-O-Wisp, though, that's just, like, lonely, and it's just misleading travelers just so it has someone to hang out with, and then they just eventually die?
I figured that they were always lonely. Like, it's a memento kind of thing. Every single time they drag someone in, it's out of this desperate fear, the last moments of their life, and as soon as they get them, they reset, and then it's the same desperate fear of the last few moments of their life, and then they reset, and it's the same over and over again.
It's a very hurt people situation.
Yeah, absolutely.
I hate to see it.
Yeah, but just dialed up to this incredible amount.
We're going to use that to get into the second question. Amelia, is the Will-O-Wisp a monster?
In this context where it's like this was an evil thing when it lived and then it died and it's evil again, it's a monster in the maybe the monsters were here with us all time kind of situation, where it's like, yeah, if you make bad guy McGee spit on babies, yeah, he's a monster. If I saw this, if I didn't have this stat block and I was just observing these in the wild and had to make inferences about their behavior, I don't think it's a monster. Honestly, I would put it kind of in the same category that we put actual Will-O-Wisps or like reports, where it's like, there's something happening. This is some kind of phenomenon.
It's just spooky.
It's just a thing. Sometimes people die weird and there is like a little echo of them that stays behind. And that's just life.
It's funny to see the times where Wizards drops the veil on it. Because sometimes we've had monsters like the dryads or the unicorns where they're in the monster manual and they still can't find a reason for you to fight the thing. And the Will-O-Wisp was just like, you know what? Fuck it. It's evil.
This light hates you.
It was alive. It was evil. It died. It's still evil. And it's going to try to kill people. You should kill it back first.
If the Will-O-Wisp was a really, truly evil person, and this is the punishment, maybe you can make the argument for a monster because they continue to then be this evil thing, right? And they're aware and they make decisions. Fine. If it, however, is just something that happens to anyone who walks through a swamp and is unlucky enough to lose that mental battle and wander out into it, it's not a monster. It's just a really unfortunate, tragic thing that happens to anyone who walks through.
And that's the whole thing. Like, the closest it gets to it is there's an implication that they feed on death.
They can't help it. They're just hungry.
Yeah.
They actually do invoke some element of ecology to it, where it's like, no, they'll work with a black dragon or a night hag or some cultists or whatever. It'll lure things into an ambush, and then those things will get killed, and then it just feeds on the fact that they died. And like, that's...
When it says work with, it's an intelligence of 13, but it's a wisdom of...
That's a wisdom of 14. It's smarter than the average bear, bud.
Smarter than the average human.
Right. That's the weird part.
Wait, does that mean that, like, if a rant... Because if we're just talking, this is just a person who died, right? Does that mean you get smarter when you become a Will-O-Wisp?
Probably not right away. Maybe they're saying, like, if you lived for this long, you get a little wiser, a little bit more intelligent, right? No less evil.
But, like, all you're doing is murdering people violently.
You're really good at it.
You want the honest answer. It's they want to make sure it has saves. That's literally it.
Also, the reason why I think it has intelligence and wisdom is because for me, when you see a will-o-wisp, it first draws you out with the light, but then it starts showing you, like, you catch a glimpse of a loved one you miss, or you hear their voice. Like, it is actively engaging and then replaying your biggest hits to draw you further and further in.
That's gonna feed into the last bit here, is just how would you change it? And I think that idea of giving it more ability to directly fuck with players.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely more psychological mindfuckery.
Giving it detect thoughts and having it specifically, like, be able to probe deeper in than, you know, the surface level detect thoughts is fine. But I wanted to, like, impose disadvantage. I wanted to be able to read your mind, to do those little illusions or to imitate voices.
I want to do something like phantasmal force adjacent. Instead of something that scares you, it's like something that you don't want to see, or a memory that you didn't want to reconfront, or like a moment that filled you with fear. And it doesn't have to be fear like, ah, this thing is so scary. But like, when, like, if you saw something that was like the memory of losing a loved one, where you're just filled with, like, overcome with sadness. If I was a little light that wanted to eat souls, that's the other thing, is I think if I was a light that wanted to eat souls, I would not be so mean about it necessarily. Like, maybe after some point I'm like, okay, like, whatever. But I think if I was deciding, okay, I gotta eat some souls so I can still keep being a miserable little light thing. Sure, whatever. If I see people who look like their dicks, yeah, I'm gonna scare them. I think there's also the potential to see people who you think are, if we're going with the idea of it being some sort of shade of a person that is left behind, or like a reflection of who they were, you could kill them and show them the most beautiful thing that they had ever seen, and their memory and the shade that would be left behind in death would be something better than whatever you had to get stuck with.
There could be like that weird one that just for some reason got shown something beautiful in that moment, or like felt safe and secure for some moment in the very end and died differently. Sure.
You know, and I'm like, wow, this person seems really nice, but I need a soul to munch on. I would show them a beautiful flower or something, and then I'd munch, and then we'd go our separate ways.
I really like this idea of them providing that level of despair. One, because just mechanically, I think doing something where you're like inflicting levels of exhaustion could be really cool. These things go down pretty easy, but that's the sort of thing that not only is it fucking awful, but if I'm not mistaken, when you get a full night's rest, you only go back one level of exhaustion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just a great way to, like,
you could be hounded by these things throughout the entire trip through the swamp.
Fuck, hounded for days. You're hounded one day, but you got four levels of exhaustion because they really fucked you up. And now you got the better part of a week just coming back to normal. You're healed completely. You got all your hit points back by the end of the first day. But you run into an encounter on day two. Sorry, disadvantage on all your checks. Fuck you.
This isn't a monster you send your party to fight. This is a monster you send your party to battle with themselves. This is exactly the mirror, the reflection. This is where you, like, send them to do all the psychological torture and really get shit out on the table before they leave the swamp changed.
That's where that despair thing comes in, is because mm-hmm. all of these effects that you see monsters impose, it's always a fear effect or it's a paralysis effect. But the entire theme you're working with on a will-o-wisp is it's the illusion of hope that's going to take it away from you. So if it's not even, like, for some reason, they're electrical, they decided. They do lightning damage. Fun fact.
I think that's because, like, it's got to be light stuff and it can't be radiant for, like, theme reasons.
Right.
And which it can't happens fire. A lot with D&D. Yeah. Like, that's lightning.
Sure. Fine. Whatever. But having it do, like, it's the light, the little beacon floating off in space, and it leads you off to where it's dangerous, and then it disappears. And then after giving you the hope and kind of scaring you a little bit, instead of putting in a fear effect and making you run, it wears you down until you're like, no, that's fine. I guess I'm here. I guess this is what it is. I'll just lay down and die then.
A will-o-wisp doesn't want to swoop in and kill you right away. It wants the swamp to kill you and to weaken you, because if it can drag out your pain, that's what it's feeding on. If it kills you right away, that was delicious, but
yum, yum, yum.
Now it's got a couple weeks where it doesn't have another meal. If it can slowly feed off you as it watches you fall further and further into despair until you cannot continue any longer and choose to simply stop and die, that is a very good meal to have over several days, perhaps even a week or two.
In my experience, when you put Will-O-Wisps in combat, they are very rarely dealing the most damage. They deal 2d8 lightning damage plus 4 to hit. And that's the thing with a Will-O-Wisp, right? Is you see it, you're like, this is a cute glowing light. It zaps you here and there. It might turn invisible. It's intangible. It's hard to hit if you don't have magic weapons. It's resistant to a whole ton of shit. But like, it's a nuisance. Until someone drops in combat, that mechanic there mimics mechanically the feeling of a Will-O-Wisp, where you see something and you're not worried. You're like, it's strange. You might even think this is some weird forest spirit. This is something not good. And it's not as much. It's not an issue until it's already too late. And then as soon as someone drops to zero once, something that was, oh, we're going into death saves, or I have spare the dying on my next turn.
Pop a healing word.
It's like, okay, now all of a sudden you're trying to see where you are in the initiative relative to that Will-O-Wisp, because it's going to hit your friend. And the more of your party members who go down, the more it heals, the harder it is to get that. And then you have to spend your time taking out the Will-O-Wisp, saving your party member, and fighting the thing that you came here to fight in the first place. Throwing a Will-O-Wisp or like a few into the mix, I recommend several, because like, kind of depending on action economy.
You want a swarm.
As you may have guessed from the whole physicist thing, I came up through a lot of academia. So one of the things that you talk about in like lesson planning is scaffolding concepts, like making sure that when you come in, you teach the players something and then you make sure they learn the extra. So you run into a Will-O-Wisp. All they do is this little fucking ping. It's 2d8 lightning damage, which is not nothing, but it's like 5 or 6 damage on average. So if you're working, like you said, an 8th or 9th level party, chip damage, okay, we can swat them out of the way. There's only the one there. Somebody cast magic missile. And then you hit a swarm of them. It's a little obnoxious. But then there are 3 or 4 of them around the edges of the boss. And it's almost this inverse scaffolding problem where you've spent this entire encounter teaching them low hit points, not an awful, like, AC exists, not a lot of damage. Don't worry about it. Until. Because now suddenly you've spent this whole thing basically advertising this as a nothing threat, but the fact that they fucking exist means someone's going to die. Which is, again, an awesome thing to throw at a level 8 or 9 party, because now if you don't do that to the cleric, how often do you really get to use your res spells?
Right.
Just give
That's
them a
what
chance.
I'm always
like,
saying.
Let them be cool.
Let them just show off.
Also, just like, there's a timer on that battle then. And I love that idea that, oh, shoot, like, we have to stop this. Because like, you could like fight one, right? And you battle it, and then it like tries to run away. So you charge after it and you kill it. And then you look around and you're in darkness. And then all of a sudden, bing, 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 all these little lights start popping up all around you. And you realize you've just been suckered. Even in death, you've been suckered into the rest of them.
Aram, what's going on? Why is all of our stuff in boxes?
Good news, Dylan! Dead Ghost Productions is moving.
What do you mean, moving?
We're separating our patrons and launching a new Dead Ghost page to provide our listeners with more content and a clean RSS feed for all their podcasts. Stacy is helping us out with the heavy stuff.
She's a bit clumsy.
Okay. So that makes sense, sort of. What about the people who have already subscribed?
I've got it handled. Everyone who is currently subscribed to our Dead Ghost Productions level or our combined feeds level will get a free month once we split the feeds on June 1st. If you're signed up for a yearly subscription, you'll get just as many free months on our new Dead Ghost feed as you currently have left on that subscription.
Okay, so what do people have to do in order to make the switch?
It's easy. Everyone will get a link to activate their free subscription sent directly to their email. They just need to follow that link to the new Dead Ghost patron and they'll be all set.
The changes won't start until June 1st, and if anyone has questions about it, they can email us at killeverymonster@gmail.com or deadghostproductions@gmail.com. They can also message us directly in Patreon.
Okay. This better not interfere with my experiments, Vardian.
Don't worry, Dylan. I've told Stacy to stay clear of your laboratory. How do we safely power down the nuclear generator again?
Aram, what was that?
Good news. I found a dragon.
No, you didn't. Dragons aren't real, Aram.
Oh, they are quite real, Dylan. And very clumsy.
All right, I'll play. Why did you bring a dragon here?
What better way to promote Kill Every Monster than with an actual dragon? We may need to pump up the Patreon just a little.
For $2 a month, supporters on patreon.com/killeverymonster get access to ad-free episodes as they're released. For $5, you'll get them early along with audio DMs notes featuring Aram and I discussing how we made each episode.
For $10 a month, you'll get audio and video DMs notes along with extended cutting room floor content that didn't quite make it into the main episode.
We also have a $25 investor level and a $50 producer level. Support at these tiers ensures we can continue to produce Kill Every Monster and allows us to hire more talent from the community. Both levels get a personalized shout-out at the end of every episode, and producers get a welcome pack of each official Dead Ghost and Kill Every Monster pin we have left in stock.
The $2, $5, and $10 patron tiers are available with a 7-day free trial for new subscribers. So head over to patreon.com/killeverymonster and check out everything we have to offer at no cost to you.
Want another free way to help the show? Give us a review. Written reviews are amazing, but even clicking 5 stars is a huge boost. Podcast reviews are the best way we have to get the show in front of new listeners. You can leave reviews for Kill Every Monster on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Podcast Addict.
Find all the ways you can support the show and leave us a review at patreon.com/killeverymonster.
I want you to tell me what the last thing you remember is.
It's a long, long, long time ago. I think the last memory that I have, I think it's bits and pieces. I think I remember being on a path. I remember seeing something. Don't remember what I saw, but I wanted to get a better look. And then a flash of light. And then I think the snapping of a branch. I think I remember a fall. And then pain. And I think everything since then has been pain in one way or another.
There's one thing I'm going to add in, and that is confusion. You've been, it might be retroactive, it might be something you're imposing on the memories that wasn't there in the first place, but you've been where you are in these sort of swamps for an uncountable amount of time. Not just because, you know, the whole rhythm of the day doesn't mean anything to you anymore, but it's just been so long. It doesn't matter. It doesn't mean anything. But it's a swamp. Where do you fall? How could you have possibly been that far above ground? And none of it lines up. All you know is that one day you were in the air, and then you were in the water, and something, just chaos, and then misery. And it's been like that for so long. And what I want to know is,
Why do you keep killing people?
I think when you're alone and when you feel like you're only a memory of the person that you used to be, there is the desire to reach out and connect with something in any meaningful way, if only to make someone feel the way you do now.
Aram, why aren't you in charge? The settlement is new here. It was established, what, 5-6 years ago? You've had the first few hatchlings. Just getting established was a massive pain in the ass, and you worked your ass off in that process, and I want to know, why are you not in charge?
I'm not the first hatched, and no matter how hard I work, and no matter what else I do, my brothers got out of those eggs before I did, and one of them had to help me get out. That has followed me my entire life. No one's ever let me forget that. And because I'm the little hatchling that needed help getting out, no matter what I do now, that's just how I'm seen.
And that's one of those things that just has followed your entire life. And being lizard folk, there are enough siblings that no matter where you go, someone has mentioned something. And that just the little refrain, the thing that people mention, just anytime it seems like you're having trouble with something, there's some comment, something to the effect of like, come on, how hard can it be? Easy as cracking out of an egg.
Like the elders will just turn to each other and quietly whisper, well, he's still coming out of his shell. You know, just little things like that.
Anybody can do it. It's like hatching. You just got to break through the shell. Anybody can crack out of an egg.
And that drove me to the outsides of the society. So I kind of like, that's why I'm a monk. I kind of like spent a lot of time meditating alone in the swamp, thinking, practicing, doing a lot of physical exercise. And I just became, so if I couldn't be within the tribe and run it, I could be a protector of it from the outside. So that's who I became.
When people started going missing, at first, there was a lot of work establishing the camp, and that was something where everything was being brought in from outside on well-worn tracks. But recently, it started off small. There were some of the elders, not like the elders, but just older folk, who didn't necessarily have anybody looking after them. And then just one day, someone goes, hey, have you seen X? And the answer is no. Last anybody saw them, they were headed towards a swamp. And they just didn't come back. And this keeps happening. It started getting younger at a certain point. There was a woman. Everyone knew that she was unhappy where she was in the tribe. Everyone was expecting her to leave, so when she did, no one asked any questions. But you, being on the outside and seeing these people often enough when they're leaving, there's a certain point where it's just a critical mass. People don't just fuck off. Old folks don't just decide to wander into the swamp and die.
Well, every new colony is going to lose some, and sure, we have that thing where our old people just do walk into the swamps and die when they're ready, but
there's
the
a certain
speed
level
of
like,
which the turnover is happening.
They gotta
much.
Tell someone, right?
Yeah, you leave a note.
It's ritualistic. You get everyone together, you pack them something, so it's basically like, as long as you continue to walk, you know, you have these things from home and you'll be able to keep going.
These people just disappeared. They went out for a night stroll and they're gone.
A stage worse, given that you've seen some of the relics around the edges. It seems like there used to be an elven city near here. And those people drown. They go in the water and they die. Lizard folk don't fall in the water and die. You can breathe there.
Well, I can hold my breath for 15 minutes, according to the rules.
Just saying, like, disappearing into the swamps is harder for your people.
Yeah, we like it here. Has anyone seen lights in the swamp up until now?
A little bit. However, especially you living out near the edges, one of the things you see is whenever people leave, lizard folk do have dark vision, but you can always see better by light. There are always lights bobbing around in the swamp anytime anyone goes out there. So it's not remarkable. Yes, everyone has seen lights in the swamp.
Everyone has their own tale of these. Ours is that the stars, every star in the sky is a soul, is a person. And the brighter that they shine, the brighter the lives that they lived. But sometimes they can be drawn down. A darkness can reach up and pull them out of heaven and back to the land of man, where they get lost and wander.
You've seen these lights, and basically, about a week ago, one of the kids got lost. This has been the straw that broke the camel's back, effectively. This has been a small group was gathered up. You volunteered for it immediately. It's a chance to protect, to look out for the people that don't respect you enough, but at the same time, they're your people. What I want from you is a survival check.
12 plus 5 is 17.
I'm going to double back real quick. When do you take out the team to look?
Like, we have to go out at night because that's when everyone went missing. So would we rather be searching during the day? Absolutely. But no one vanishes during the day. They all vanish at night.
Can I sprinkle some lore in here?
Please, by all means.
I feel like probably you did go searching throughout the day, right? Because, like, people go missing at night. Okay, cool. Let's find them, dead bodies, sign of where they go. I feel like looking around the day, you know, people go out. People come and go to town. You don't learn anything. You don't figure out what could be taking them anyway.
In fact, I was the one that was like, guys, there's a reason we can't find them during the day. We have to go looking at night. And no one wanted to do that. But I convinced like one, maybe two other people to look with me, but that's it. Like, no one else thinks this is a good idea.
And you are spread out a little bit. One of the things about lizard folks, being so comfortable moving through the water, having hard paths, like the way the humans do, they always have to get someone else to carry their goods. That means getting oxen, something to draw a cart. They can't just go and get the thing and carry it back. So you wind up with very hard roads. The lizard folk, you've all spread out, starting to look for tracks. And you notice bits where brambles are cracked in the wrong way. If it's due to the wind, it tends to be kind of random, but there's like a directionality to it that implies motion. And you can see, like, in a couple places, there are places where the elders, like, the scale starts to get flaky, so you can see where it's, like, been shorn off, like, when they moved through a bush and something just got pulled. Little bits of scale. You're starting to find a bit of a path. And with 17, it's high enough that you notice, as you're sort of following this, you hit a point where the mud slips a little bit under your claw. And you just sort of reach out and pad a little bit with your toes. And you feel the slope. Immediately in front of you is a drop-off. Now, you could, of course, swim down there. Wouldn't be that big a problem.
I think he would really stare out across this dark water for a moment and then lean back and, like, send out whatever call they use to shout out to each other. It's probably some, like, imitation of bird or maybe even other lizards, right? But he's going to make that noise like, hey, I'm going underwater, so I won't be able to hear you for a while.
As a species, there's a level of independence in the lizard folk. So they don't need to know where you are. It's just, hey, don't look for me. I'm not here.
Exactly.
People imitate birds because they don't want to be discovered. It's like, I'll imitate this specific bird. But, like, you're imitating a bird because it's not like you're going to alert the fucking wolves. The wolves expect to hear birds. You don't give a shit. So it's just this low-frequency chittering.
But it carries.
And it's very distinctly lizard folk.
I let out whatever chitter it is for, hey, going under, back in a bit, and I'll signal you when I come back. And everyone just nods because that's the thing we do.
Amelia, one of them disappears. You've been monitoring this, not necessarily like with any intensity, just people are walking through your territory. Three of them initially, and one of them just goes under the water. There's a little voice at the back of your head that just goes, he'll drown. And then just other things, just constant whispers. Your thoughts keep coming like people are speaking them to you. No, it's a lizard folk. It doesn't matter if he stays under for long enough. He could drown. It doesn't matter. This is a chance. We have a chance now. And you see the other two out there wandering, a little aimless, but with some level of intent, like they're searching. What do you want to do?
How close are they to each other? And what directions are they going? I assume they're like...
Yeah, they're spreading out a little bit because, I mean, like, what's the point of searching if you're all searching the same spot?
Right. Safety in numbers.
Lizard folk. Independence.
You know, they know the swamp well.
They've been here for some amount of time. It seems significant, but at the same time, relative to what you've done, trivial. You know that if you head far enough, there are these ruins, huge stone structures, beautiful filigree carvings, and it's just pulsing a little bit with magic. You know there's something in there, and it honestly worries you. But, you know, they never head out that way, and you sure as shit don't either. One of them's headed in that direction. The other one seems to be going almost orthogonal, just kind of off the path, more towards where you know there is a small dwarven settlement. Just barely even a fucking hill, but they've turned it into a quarry. So what do you want to do?
I want to position myself kind of just below the tree line in the air in the same direction as that settlement, but a little further away. Like if you made a hard line from where he was to the settlement, I'm going to be a little further out, like a little further north where you're kind of close, but basically trying to guide him from getting too close to where other people are. And once I move into that tree line where I'm against where starlight might be trickling through occasionally, I just want to pulse faintly in the same way a star twinkles and see if it notices anything.
It's a moment before they seem to notice you, where they're just kind of wandering. The head scans across the skyline and goes straight past you and then flicks back. It's not even the whole head that moves. It's just you could start to see the pupil on the far side as it looked past you, and the eye flicked back hard. It's light that should be trickling through the branches, and there's a moment where you watch him realize the light's on the wrong side of the tree. Doesn't know what he's looking at. It doesn't seem intent on you or anything. It's just, nope, that's fucked.
Now that I have its attention, I just want to descend directly down, kind of drifting almost like a lightning bug, lilting a bit in the way that bugs don't quite fly straight. And then when I'm roughly 10 feet off the ground, no closer to him, but I've held his eye line, I'm just going to pulse a warm amber just in and out.
The expression that crosses his face is like almost hits recognition. It looks pain for a second, and it says a word. It takes half a second to register.
Ilis?
And you recognize it as a name.
Hearing any word from it, I glow brighter.
It starts to stalk forward, and speaking in lizard folk, the sound hits you and just reverberates into concept. You don't think you ever spoke this language, but you know what it's saying. And it's apologetic.
I'm sorry that we let you just go off. We should have been a little bit more careful. I'm sorry that you can't glow brightly enough, that you couldn't stay where you're meant to be, but we found you.
And he starts to wander towards you.
I think once gets about 10 feet out, the light snuffs and then immediately appears 30 feet further back.
There's a low noise, a little crackling sound that it makes. Just as it's sort of like pointing its head around as if it's just trying to make sure the sound permeates. And he follows.
I would watch the way that this creature begins to move around this area. I think at first it is very sure of there's a light, I'm walking forward. I think that keeps repeating. And at some point it realizes that the trees have grown thicker, that it's not usually out this far. I think I would notice the way that it's looking downward to check its footing, looking around, trying to find, you know, a landmark for the future. Maybe it stumbles a little bit when it's distracted. I think there's a moment that I would recognize from experience when someone realizes that they're out further than they've gone before.
And the moment where things go wrong is where he like puts his hand up on a tree to kind of catch himself. And it flinches, pulls back, and you can see like the hand burnt and the wood is too smooth there. There's an acid basically that has run the thing completely clean. And it starts to realize like, okay, this is a problem. Wherever I am is not where I am meant to be. And that's the point where it looks to you, and in that same sort of low, sort of chittering language, gives a quick apology and starts to back off. Not necessarily fully turning around and walking away. It's still doing that, like,
I cannot follow you where you walk, and I'm sorry that you are alone. They'll know what happened to you.
I think here is where I dim slightly, because I've been about 30 feet out. I had to be kind of bright so it could see me. And I slowly drift towards him. And if there is a hand that is near, I will go up toward it.
The moment you start getting closer, it reaches out. You can see where the scales are a little bit raw. It's a little burnt. It just reaches out for you.
And I rest there, dim, kind of vibrating a little with energy.
He holds you there, and you can see the sadness roll across their face as they go to apologize again.
And I think I recognize that sadness, and it is not unlike my own, and I know what an apology is, and whether that is something I owed someone or something someone once owed me, I can still feel that emotion, and I don't know what to do with that emotion except to consume it for all that it is worth.
Yeah, by all means, roll a die for me.
So does a 10 hit?
Yes. This is a lizard folk commoner.
12 points of lightning damage.
You feel that emotion. You feel a connection. And whatever it is in you, you grab it and you pull. And you watch the terror run through this thing's face as you just yank and you keep pulling. All of that intention, all of that emotion, everything that they are, you yank through this connection until they just stumble backwards and fall into the water. Aram, when you come up out of the water,
first question, how many bodies did I find while I was under there?
You found one, uninjured, completely lacking struggle, not caught in anything. It looks like they died before they went in the water.
Is it one of our tribe?
Yes. It is in there with bones. Now, these ones, some of them look like they legitimately drowned. Smaller bones, thinner bones, the humanoid head shape. Impossible to tell them apart at this point. Once it's just bones, like, pretty sure it's not a halfling.
Things have been dying here for a lot longer than we've been here.
Yes.
I will grab any, like, little trinket or anything off the body of our townsmate so I can prove who they were. And once I'm satisfied, I'll come back to the surface.
You come up to a frantic call. It is the lizard folk equivalent of SOS. It's coming generally from the north. It's a higher pitch, so you can get some directionality out of it. It's not just a notification. It is specifically something to be located and gone towards.
I launch out of the water and am sprinting towards it with all of my monk speed.
It doesn't take too long. These people are going slowly, as you were, honestly, you know, trying to comb through. There's no reason to get that far off the path, that far out into the wilds, unless you're, like, trying to chase something down, but that would be foolish to do on your own. It's another one of the lizard folk. I don't know. I lost track of them. I was headed north. They were going eastward, but then it was somewhere almost directly east of my position. Like, it starts outlining everything as precisely as they can. Lizard folk do not experience panic in the same way that some of the warm-blooded species do. There is still a level of franticness to this. It feels more like an adrenaline rush than a full-blown fear response.
So I've got, like, one eye towards her, one eye out towards the swamp.
Sure, yeah, you can do the chameleon thing.
Right, so he's listening to both of them, right? He's listening to her, but almost, like quieting her a little bit so he can listen to the swamp as well. And what strikes him is that it is far too quiet. So he would turn to her.
Gather the others. Leave. Go back home. It is unsafe. I will handle this.
And I turn towards the swamp.
And this is a subtlety of lizard folk language. There is unsafe. There is a place that, you know, things can go wrong. There is unsafe is like, you know, there are wolves that roam these parts. And then there is a word that is almost reminiscent of poisonous. That's the word that you use. And then you head off to the northeast.
Right. Alone.
Yep. The safest way to travel. Amelia, how long do you spend sort of around your kill?
I think as soon as I kill something, I'd turn invisible. And then I knew there were more people. I think I would probably wait near it to see if someone else comes here specifically.
Absolutely. Aram, survival.
Okay. 15 plus 5 is 20.
You pick up on the trail fairly easily because there's a certain point where it moves from the sort of, we'll call it precision meandering of a search pattern. And it just becomes walking. There is an effort in the search to not disturb anything, just in case there's something that you miss, right? And someone goes over your ground again and tries to find something. Then it turns into the full-blown plodding steps through the swamp, pushing things out of the way, like a purposeful walk.
I've hunched down a bit now. My tribe are these deep, crimson, thick necked things, and when we hunch down, we're kind of almost curled over. And so I've just kind of like lowered down. My eyes are kind of sparkling in the way of a hunter. And for the first time, this little creature is facing something looking for it, as opposed to being drawn towards it.
Next to one of the trees, you can see this almost divot, too smooth, almost like you would call it tool work from afar, but the moment you get up close, it is smooth, almost like the surface was melted off of it. And down at the bottom of that tree, where the roots start to form. It grows out into the swamp. You can see a claw resting up against it with the arm falling into the water.
Rush over.
Yep.
Pull them out.
They are breathing, but it's shallow breaths.
I am going to attempt to swamp stabilize them.
Give me a medicine check.
Yeah,
or
okay.
Heal or whatever the fuck we call it in this edition. I don't give a shit.
I got medicine.
Roll that one skill that no one ever rolls.
At 11 plus 3 is 14.
That's enough to stabilize. You get them out of the water. Thank fuck your lizard folk, because otherwise drowning would have been a major concern. But you just get the head above water, pressed up against the tree, and you find no sign of injury aside from a raw burn on the one claw. And in the center of that, what looks almost like a focal point. You've seen people burnt by fire before, and the hand itself isn't that. It looks like a chemical burn. It's an acid burn. But in the middle of that is this tight, focused spot. It looks like a miniature sun was set in that spot in the hand and just burnt. Otherwise, no injuries whatsoever.
Can they walk? Can they move? Do they have to stay right here?
They were at zero hit points and you stabilized. They're just not making death saves right now.
Okay, gotcha.
Like, this is a dead man.
Right.
Dead lizard.
I have no healing magics. I have no ability whatsoever. This person is stabilized. Dude, I know them. Well, what is their name?
Fuck off.
Come on.
No lizard folk names. This is not...
My name is Trelax. Go on that.
Carlock.
Carlock. Perfect. All right. So, Carlock, can you hear me?
There is a rough stirring, just like enough to indicate not death. But they are out. Like I said, we are at zero hit points. Were it not for your intervention, they would have died.
Okay.
You get like a vague mumbling, like unconscious, vague, almost a dream state, mentions of the stars. And then just the quiet little like apologies.
I'm sorry, Atreus. I'm sorry.
Rest. Do you have nothing to apologize for?
And then I would like put him against the tree, cover him in brushes and mud except for his head. You know, so that he's camouflaged, right? Then turn towards the swamp and summon my spear.
You look around, and there is no sign of a fucking thing. Amelia.
Yeah.
There's a new one.
Mm-hmm.
This one seems to be... like, he came with a panic. Came in, got the other one out of the water, and now he's looking around holding a spear. It came out of fucking nowhere.
This guy's against a tree, the stabilized guy. I'm going to move about 60 feet out. I move exactly 55 feet out from this guy. Still invisible. Just above the water. Just like 2.5-3 feet. And I'm going to shine. And I would like to hold an action to turn invisible should the second man come near me.
Aram, you see out in the distance something light up. Honestly, you can't make anything of it because it's too far away. But what you see is effectively as if someone posted up a little lantern there, but without any of the shadow. There's always that glass structure around the flame.
It's just the flame.
It's just the flame.
As if it's floating in midair.
Tiny, weak star.
And I would take instinctively a few steps towards it out of anger and excitement, and then stop and think. And I would release my spear so it just fades into this chaotic energy. Then I will summon my secondary weapon, which is a sling. And I will creep a little forward, get this thing moving, and hurl a rock at it.
Make me an attack roll at disadvantage.
And that is going to be a 9 plus 6 is 15.
Does not hit.
AC on a Will-O-Wisp is 19.
So it plops in the water, like, right beneath it.
You directly hit the reflection of the Will-O-Wisp.
Right. It's difficult to know where it is. Okay.
Yeah, especially that far out.
I think he would load a second rock, keep slowly moving towards it. It's like, whip, 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 and he starts to whistle.
Yeah, let him come.
Yeah, I'm going to get within, like, non-disadvantage range.
Okay, yeah.
And I'm going to try again.
Amelia, you had specifically requested, like, a body of water. Are you looking to just be above water, or are you specifically looking for something with depth?
I'm not necessarily looking. Oh, well, if there's depth, I'd go for it, but I just specifically want him to be wading at least, like, waist high.
And I'm comfortable with that. That doesn't cause me any pause whatsoever. I have a swim speed, and it's the same as my movement speed.
You are moving towards this thing very, very slowly. And because of the difficult terrain, you can basically, at a full round action, like, get about halfway there. You right. are within sling distance. And Amelia, you're just letting them?
Yep, I am holding firm. Haven't moved at all. The light doesn't necessarily increase or decrease in brightness, but it does twinkle.
That's the only motion to it. That twinkling. Otherwise, it is holding absolutely perfect static position.
All right. Then when I get within 30, I'll let another rock fly.
Okay. Make a roll at not disadvantage.
That is going to be 12. 12 plus 6 is 18. Just missed it.
This time, it gets close enough to require movement. Not even particularly far. 5-6 inches?
That's probably the first time I kind of know exactly where it is, too, right? Because I can see where the rock interacted with it, and that gives me an idea of how far away it is.
Because otherwise, I mean, you're trying to gauge distance based on brightness.
Right.
And if you ask any astronomer, that's fucking hard, actually.
It's super hard.
And astronomers are so petty about it.
Like, Jesus Christ, I get it. It's hard, but you decided not to just study shit that's nearby. Get over yourself, space nerd.
I think seeing that, he would, like, reach for the third rock, but then pause again. And instead of that, he would take his sling in both hands and open it up so that it's a wide, thick amount of canvas. Because when you look at a Will-O-Wisp, it doesn't look that much different in size than a sling stone. So his idea is now going to be to come up on it, encase it in the sling, and then quickly whip, 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 and hurl it as far as he can.
Catch a falling star. Right? Put it in your pocket.
Catch a falling star and swing it out of the swamp.
That makes perfect sense. I'm going to have you make the better of an arcana or a nature roll.
Sure.
If you have both, you can have advantage.
I have nature, but not arcana, so I'm going to roll that.
Mels, this is where I'm going to slowly disseminate my favorite house rule. If they have an intersectional check like this, where you're like, oh, well, I guess this is sort of a swamp thing, but it's also a wizard thing, you ask for either check, and if they have both knowledge proficiencies, you just give them advantage. That way they can feel extra clever.
Oh, nice. I love that.
That's going to be a 6 plus 3 is 9.
As you were.
All right, excellent.
It seems like such a good idea, actually. I really want you to go for it.
So I have now, like, lowered myself. I am now trying to stealth actively as I'm coming up on this thing.
So this is just going on common sense. There is no rule basis for this, but a Will-O-Wisp doesn't have a facing. Like, it just perceives around it, right? So it's like, you are absolutely trying to sneak up on it, but it, no matter what direction it's facing, it was watching you go underwater a little bit, and it's watching you come up.
Right, yes. Yeah, I've got, like, my nose and my eyes, and I'm just kind of slowly creeping up.
Yeah, this is a legitimately intimidating version of when you look at your cat and you're like, don't hunt me, I feed you.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
So, what I'm going to say is go ahead and make me a grapple check. Go ahead and roll around.
My grapple roll is going to be a 11 plus 6 is 17.
Wow, that's pretty good. That's pretty high. They're immune to grappling. So, Amelia, what did you want to do?
As soon as you come to grapple me, instantly snuffs out invisible, And then I'm going to use my 50 feet of movement to go back to the friend who is stable next to the tree.
Damn it. Okay.
So, Aram.
Yes.
You actually fully believe this thing to have disappeared. Like, it is in your head, it has teleported. You don't know that they're immune to grapple. You don't know fuck all about them. You rolled a 9.
I had it, and then I didn't. It's like when the cat closes its hand around the laser LED and then looks to see if there's nothing in its paws. Yeah.
Fuck.
I'm invisible. As soon as I see this other being turn around, I drop. Essentially, invisibility, it says, like, you can turn it off by dropping concentration. And I wait until it's looking at me, and then I'm going to consume life on the unconscious friend.
Son of a bitch.
You watch as this other lizard folk's eyes shoot open, and it seems terrified. And you watch the exact same glow light up behind its eyes. The body flexes up from the chest, the entire spine arches. And when it goes flat, that motion was just enough that you watch it flop back down and roll back into the water, face down.
Okay, so I dive under, I swim to the edge, I pop back out, I rush over just to check. Clearly dead.
100% dead. And just for listeners' benefit, Amelia, that wasn't for temporary hit points. That's for actual healing, and you've taken no damage. So that was just spite.
Yeah.
That was a spite kill.
I approve of that.
All right. So he's mad. He releases his sling. He resummons his spear and then reaches into a pouch and pulls out a flask of oil, spreads it across the water behind him and lights it on fire so the surface of the water goes up.
That's like 4 actions, Aram.
I want to stab him with lightning at some point, yeah.
I'm going to say, Aram, you can pick which thing Amelia is interfering with. I will let you get all of this out.
Check on the guy, summon a spear, pull out the flask, you know, throw it across the water, light it on fire.
I will let you get all of it out. Mills is attacking at advantage because you are fundamentally not in combat right now.
100%.
Okay, cool. Mills, advantage.
They stop me right before I light it. I've got the flint out.
Let's treat it as a concentration save.
Okay.
Does like a 23 hit?
Yeah, 23 definitely hits. 100%.
You're a fuck.
I am evil.
Roll your damage.
Only 4 points of lightning damage.
Stings.
Roll me a con save at DC 10, Aram.
That is going to be a 10 plus 1 is 11.
You feel that. Like, it jerks you forward, and you just hold it all together. There is a moment where your hands are wet, fucking soaked, and you're holding metal and rocks, things that are notorious for falling out of your hands when wet. And you just fucking barely. There's a moment where it slips and you grab and then you just strike. And everything in front of you, all of the water, bursts into flames. And we're gonna roll for initiative.
Oh, that's a natural 1. That's gross.
15 plus 4 is 19.
How did the plus 9 dex lose it?
Because in the moment of the whole thing going up, I did one thing unexpected, and I think that's why I got the jump on them.
That's fair. Aram, you get this fire off. It's your turn.
I imagine like I'm on a little like marshy but landish area with the water behind me kind of like in a half moon. Mm-hmm. So I'm like with my back against the fire, turned towards this little marshy island, spear in my hands. I turn around and see this little floating star, this little bit of soul that has gone wrong. And I would chitter a prayer into whatever we believe in, like a version of, I am sorry to do this, but it must be done.
Lizard Jesus, yeah.
Yeah, Lizard Jesus. I am sorry to do this, but it must be done. And then I would strike with my spear.
All right, make your attack roll while I Google lizard folk gods.
I am going to spend a key point to do flurry of blows.
Okay.
My first roll is a 17.
Misses.
My second roll is an 11. Miss. My third roll is a natural 20, which will hit.
Yeah, I'll allow that to hit me, actually.
He comes lunging in point first, completely misses you. He does a little spin circle to come around with the back end of it, slams into the swamp, curls swamp water and guck everywhere, totally misses you. But one little piece of like swamp water hits you for a moment and it temporarily either blinds you or mutes your light just enough for me to focus on that. And that's what I stab. And it's a magical weapon because it's my Kensai weapon.
Ew.
So that does 5 plus 5 is 10 points of damage.
Ooh,
that's a starting point, I guess.
What does it look like when I actually stab you?
Not quite a spark. Metal hitting lightning, right? There would be an arc on it. This isn't quite lightning, and your magical weapon isn't quite metal.
Yeah.
I think there's kind of like if you put something that's coated with oil and water, how it forms a little bubble around it, but still is leaning closely to the edges. I think that's what happens with your weapon and the light of this, where it's, you puncture it, it almost forms around your puncture. And you can tell for a moment, there's no emotion here. There is a slight dimming, then brightening, and then receding back to the ambient glow that it was before you hit it as you pull out. And while you don't know anything about the nature of what this weird ethereal ball of light is, you can tell what you did made some kind of purchase in some kind of way.
It's light that has resistance.
Yeah. As an action, I'm going to turn invisible. And then I'm going to move just above this guy's head. It's like maybe like 15 feet. No, 10 feet. Probably can't reach that far.
As soon as you go invisible, I'm staying where I am, and I am using dry brush or grass to basically make as much smoke as possible. I'm trying to see if the smoke bothers you or if it interferes with you. I'm just trying to fill this area with smoke.
You know what? I'll give you a nature roll.
Okay.
It's like reasonably no, but I feel like you're doing a thing that's interesting enough that I want to give you something.
16 plus 3 is 19.
I'm going to say that you get enough to localize. Not enough to cancel out the invisibility by any stretch.
I can't cancel out the invisibility, but if they move through the smoke.
Basically, you didn't get an attack of opportunity just now because you couldn't tell that they were leaving your threatened range.
Right.
Now you would be aware enough to attack, but you're still going to get the disadvantage due to invisibility. Does that sound fair, Mills?
Yeah, I'm good with that.
That's cool. Awesome. That actually makes it like worthwhile and sensible, and it works within the limitations of the creature.
You gotta give everybody their shit, you know?
Now my eyes are flickering with the flame around me. My chest is heaving and I'm just clutching the spear.
You've got the extra pair of eyelids that normally close underwater closed to protect you from the smoke.
They're bright yellow as they flick back and forth.
Amelia, it's your turn.
I have like 5 feet reach, so I'm going to just stay right above the head and just zap down lightning from above.
Yeah, because I'm still staring like out and above, but not directly above me.
Yeah.
You have advantage because you're invisible?
Hell yeah, I do. Same number, 15.
I have armor class of 17 that does not hit me.
Ooh.
between my monk abilities and my tough lizard exterior.
I am no longer invisible.
At the last minute, like as I'm looking out, I just saw like a little bit of smoke.
Yeah, you see the turbulence.
Exactly. And I just shot to the right as this bolt of lightning hits where I was standing.
And you can immediately see in the ground the burn, the tight little precise dot of absolute heat. Strictly speaking, and this is the if you want to be a dick about it, you could proc the attack of opportunity to float back up. Just knowing that he's a monk, he's probably going to get multiple swings in if you stay in range.
That's a good point. I think I will do that.
All right, and I will take that attack of opportunity.
So you said you were initially 15 feet above, so we're going to say same territory. You're 15 feet up. Aram, do you have anything you can try?
Sure do. I've got my spear that I can summon at will, so I throw it.
Excellent. Okay.
Normal roll because they're no longer invisible.
That is going to be a 19 plus 7 is 26.
That will hit.
Okay, that was only a 3. So 3 plus 5 is 9.
Okay.
Excellent. 8. 3 plus 5 is 8.
You said it so confidently, I wasn't even thinking about the numbers. I was too busy trying to subtract 9 from 12.
As soon as it passes through you, it hits, it kind of stretches that glow out like before, and it vanishes as it passes through you. Like, it simply becomes nothing. And then with my bonus action, I resummon it.
Okay, so you've got it back in your hand.
Mm-hmm.
So that means you can't do your flurry of blows, though, right?
Correct. That's it. That's all I could do this round.
Then Amelia, she's all yours.
In fact, I even like temporarily turn just for a second. I take my eyes off you to look at my hand as I'm reforming it and then look back up.
I'm going to turn invisible. I'm going to move 10 feet any direction, horizontal axis. I'm going to wait.
Okay, Aram, it's your turn. You've got a vague position. You, the sort of thing where you feel like you could take a swing and have a chance to hit.
Right.
However.
Yeah, I mean, they just vanish. I'm not seeing anything move through the smoke. Clearly, they've caught on to my ruse. So I think I would just, you know, again, hunker down. And I imagine, like, the fire's not going to last long. Right? It's probably already burning itself out. There's just oil on top of water in a little bottle, right? Okay. So as it's starting to die down, I would then grab my spear and slip back. So if they're slipping back, I'm slipping back. So I'm sliding back into the water.
Amelia, you watch this lizard folk just fall back into the water. What do you want to do?
I don't want to risk fighting this thing head on. It seems much more difficult to kill than the random old people, children who have walked in, even this person. I don't remember a lot about being alive in particular. I have observed, I also don't really remember all of the things I observe about the people who travel through the swamp. They do have to sleep eventually. So I will sit and wait. Because eventually he is going to get tired of waiting, and I will not.
And I think he would. He would sit in the water for a while and wait. The fire burns out. He's still waiting. He swims around a bit, kind of his tail, swishing back and forth in the water as he glides through. And nothing happens. He gets out. He's looking around, he's searching, still nothing. After a while, he kind of settles down, the spear vanishes from his hand. He goes to do whatever funeral rites his people would do. And now he's been out here hours. It is a long trek back to the village. He is alone and he is tired. So at some point, thinking this is probably done, he would make him his way back to like the road or whatever like well-traveled path they usually use, and he would just climb up into a tree, curl up, and wait for the morning.
wait till they've been asleep for a while. This could be a very elaborate pretend sleep thing. I still have to roll to hit, and I do hit. That is a 21.
So that's going to be 4d8.
Oh, it could do it.
14.
14 points of damage. Okay, that hurt me and shocks me literally awake. I'm not down yet.
Do you fall out of the tree?
That's a good question.
Roll me a dex save. We're going to call it a DC 14. How tall?
I can't imagine that high. I would say probably like 10, 15 feet. Not super high.
Amelia, do you want to roll the D6 falling damage he's about to take?
That's a 6.
It's a lot of damage. If I wasn't a monk. I am, though, so I just pop awake, land on my feet, and take no damage.
I'm going to have you guys re-roll for initiative, because I think that's actually going to fully decide the fight here.
That is going to... Jesus Christ, that is a natural 20 for my initiative. So that's 24. You can still beat me, because natural 20 doesn't count.
And I don't respect natural 20s if they're not attack rolls.
I got a 21.
You are going to make this attack roll at disadvantage because it's at the edge of spear range.
Then I would know that, and I would instead summon my sling. My mighty, mighty sling. I stand up, I do the windmill motion with my arm, and it appears mid-swing, and I just let that rock go.
Roll so badly.
Oh, it's going to be a +7.
12 or higher beats it.
That's a 2 + 7 = 9. Just before it hits you, there's a branch I didn't quite see, and it dings against the branch and goes just off to the side.
We talked about it before. The trouble with looking at something that is just made of light is you have no gauge of how far away it is or if it's just brighter or dimmer. So there was no, like, you were aiming directly in line a foot too close.
Yep.
Are you standing up now?
Yeah. Directly beneath you, looking right at you, arm outstretched as I had just flung that stone at you.
I'm going to lower directly in front of your face and zap you.
Awesome.
You've never seen light take on the color of go fuck yourself, but there's something in the wavelength.
Previously, it had been this sort of like amber firefly-esque color. When it woke up, yeah, it was exactly this sort of ethereal bluish white light. And I think when it lowers in front of you, it like pulses in that way. If you ever looked at like light with like through polarized lenses, where at the corners it's blue and then pink and yellow, and it's just very bright and it's almost beautiful. If I hadn't rolled 23 to hit, you might have been able to appreciate it.
Right before it strikes me, it matches my same color. It turns that exact same red and then lances out.
I rolled double ones on damage.
Still gonna do it. I only have three.
Two. No,
two.
Okay.
2 points of damage.
All right. As soon as I see it turn red, I can't move. I can't get out of the way. But at the very last second, I'm able to summon my spear directly in front of me. Your bolt lances out, hits the tip of it, goes across either side of my body, but doesn't strike me full on. And it's the only reason why I survived.
Aram, you can make your attack roll. I'm going to impose disadvantage on this because, strictly speaking, mechanically, you can't summon your spear until next turn.
Agree.
So that's going to be the trade-off because, strictly speaking, you can't make this attack. You don't have a melee weapon in hand.
Right.
So this is the allowance.
I need a bonus action to some of it. Still, I'm doing it so quickly, it's at disadvantage. I love that.
Cool.
Oh, it's going to be a +7 at disadvantage.
Did you roll a nat 20 again?
No, I got a 6 + 7 = 13. In fact, the other one was a 13 + 7. So I would have hit with the other one, but no, I missed. I just, like, I swing around and I swing wild. Like, I'm not stabbing. I'm just trying to get the edge of the spear through you almost like a sword and just whiff completely.
It's the reflex of swinging at body height.
Exactly.
You're going for center of mass for a thing that doesn't actually have mass.
It's almost like trying to swat away a bug, right? Like, it's just very frantic.
You turn around and you see that shot miss, and you just see the thing settle maybe 40 feet away.
Whose turn is it?
It's your
Yours.
Turn.
He would let out just this deep guttural, that thing that alligators do when they reverberate the whole lake around them. And it's that guttural kind of that deep chitter. And he's just going to charge.
Can you move 40 feet?
Yes. I have 40 feet of movement.
Oh,
yeah.
Fuck, I should have gone a full 50.
Yeah.
A 12 plus 7 is 19.
Beats it. Let's go.
That's going to be...
Probably takes me out.
6 plus 5 is 11 points of damage.
You get it.
It's a extended lunge where you see this thing realize that it's just half an inch too close and try to pull back, and you go full extension, one arm out in front of you, and the tip touches it, and it just isn't there anymore. There is no fanfare. There is no moment of contact. It just, whatever was there isn't. It's gone.
Can we flash back for 1 second? As soon as I run the spear through it, flash back to that moment where it passed through my head.
Mm-hmm.
What did I see? What was the life of this person as they passed through my head and I saw their entire life before they became this? What was it?
Aram, you don't see a life flash before your eyes. You see absolute and utter darkness. You see spots of red. And for a second, they are all around you. And then you see points within them, little black dots, until you realize that every single one of those is a pupil in an eye. And all of the eyes open. And then you just see a maw of dark teeth. And you know, in this instant, that this swamp is not for you.
And it's with that fear that I run it through, finally. And I would stand there for a moment in darkness, in the quiet darkness of the swamp, and everything that used to feel good about it is starting to feel bad. And I would return home and I would try, like I would be celebrated, oh, you got it, but I would just be quiet and reserved, and that darkness and that fear would grow until eventually I think I would have to leave. I would just pack up and walk away and never come back here again.
You aren't the only one who left. They all left during the day, none through the swamp. But you had someone run and tell them, this place is poison. This place is toxic. It is death incarnate. And when you got back and they were celebrating, there were people who saw your eyes and read it. They could tell. Nothing about this place is good. So you didn't leave alone. Within the next week or so, you leave a few more. There's a little bit of a trickle and it stems. No one who stayed after that day lived.
Thank you for joining us for Will-O-Wisp. For more information about us, notes for each episode, and ways you can help support the show, head over to killeverymonster.com.
If any of the ideas we've discussed on the show have sparked some of your own, tell us about it on Twitter at KEMPodcast. You'll find me at DJ Malenfant and Aram at Aram Vardian.
For ad-free episodes, early releases, bonus episodes, print-ready maps, our new audio DMs notes, and my character sheets for each encounter, head over to patreon.com/killeverymonster. You can also listen to ad-free episodes and bonus content by subscribing to the show on Apple Podcasts.
Our intro theme and many of the sound effects you hear in the show were created by BattleBards. Check them out at battlebards.com.
This episode was produced by Aram Vartian and Dylan Malenfant. I also did the editing. We were joined by Amelia Somm. You can find them on Twitter at Amelia_Somm. And if you are anything like me and all of that information just fell right out of your head, you'll find everything you need at killeverymonster.com.
And we'll see you next time
for Kill Every Monster.